Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the By Yahweh's Design Conference Call for the second day of January, year 2019. I am Commander Dan, your host and chairman for this meeting of the House of Jacob Israel. The agenda for today's call is Tartaria, Q, current events, an open mic, and very shortly we will have our guest tonight, Miss Patricia Aiken. We do dedicate this call to our Heavenly Father Yahweh, who is the great I Am. We also dedicate this call to His holy remnant, who are the believing sons and daughters of Jacob, who was later named Israel. Today, these people are known as the Caucasian or true Israelite peoples of the world. Hallelujah, which means all praise Yahweh in ancient or Paleo Hebrew. To my Welsh kinsmen, Shumai, and welcome to the program, Cumru Ambeth. Callers are welcome, but we do ask that you keep your comments and or questions as short as possible to allow other folks to participate. Also, we do have youngsters and senior citizens, and we do ask that people keep that in mind as far as vocabulary during this call. We are in the question and answer mode, which means Robert's rules of order are applied, meaning one person to speak at a time. If you wish to address the chair, you basically raise your hand. If you're on a phone, you do that with star 6. If you're on a computer, there should be a little button there that says Q&A, or just informing you that's how you let me know that you wish to talk. Our website is www.pastordan.net. That's where we keep the schedule for calls, also archives, health information, links for study material, daily mail pages, things such as that. There's an awful lot going on. Sometimes the email service isn't working quite so good. Therefore, check the website from time to time. If I can't get out by email, I try to keep the Daily Mail page up to date. And like I said, there's an awful lot that has been hidden from us, some of that we're going to talk about tonight with our guest. And let me see if I've got the right phone number. Patricia, is this you?
Yes, I don't know, am I unmuted? Yes, it's me, Dan. Happy New Year.
Ah, Happy New Year. And so how are you doing tonight?
Excellent. Excellent. Excited to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Now we talked about one of the first things we want to talk about is this nation of Tartaria. I would point out to people that it wasn't all that long ago Khazaria was in the same category. Few of us had ever heard of it before. I even asked some teachers, my buddies at work, two or three of them, their wives were school teachers. When we got together, I asked them if they had ever heard of a nation in all their years of university and everything else, did they ever hear of the nation of Khazaria? And no, they had never even heard of it. So we think we're being taught the truth, and really we're not. So now we find out there's a whole other kingdom called Tartaria. So do you want to talk about that for a little bit, Patricia?
Sure, Dan. Why don't we start with that story that you told me the other day about, I think it was an elderly man that you knew, I think he'd been in MI6 or one of those, you know, government jobs, in didn't smoke or drink or whatever, and his comment, do you recall that conversation?
Yeah, that was back in 2010. The gentleman, I'll just give his first name. It was Alvy. And he was from the Carolinas, and he was on my email list. And it was during that time, a gentleman, and I believe his name was McIntyre. I know it was Scottish, so it was either McDonald or McIntyre. He had put out an email stating that the only hope for America was a military coup, and he was a veteran, and he gave a very short but very, very well-written article as to why he felt the military had to step in, basically saying that for their own safety's sake, because soldiers are the ones that die for these no-good politicians, so even if it was only to save their own lives, they needed to step up and perform a coup, because these politicians were going to get them killed. But he also stated that virtually all of the infrastructure in America, the Justice Department, the courts at the local level, state level, and the federal level were corrupt. The politicians are corrupt. The lawyers are no good. Congress is corrupt. On and on and on. And so, therefore, he felt that we'd reached a point where this was the only answer. Well, I sent that email around, and I was contacted by email by this guy, Alvey, and he asked if it would be okay to talk on the phone, because back in 2010, everybody was still quite paranoid. And I said, well, certainly, and I gave him my phone number, and he contacted me, and we had a wonderful conversation. But the gist of what he was asking was, in that letter, did I believe that McIntyre was accurate, and did I believe the American people would support such an action by the military? And I told him that as an American myself, I said I would support it if it's being done for the right reasons, to restore us to our constitutional republic. I said if it was the military rising up to put a military dictator in charge, no, nobody's going to support that. In fact, the militia will actively fight that. I said, but if it's good guys in the military whose intention is to put down the corruption and help us to get back on solid footing, then I believe that red-blooded true Americans would support that. So that was back in 2010. Is that the story you're talking about?
Not exactly.
Oh.
Actually, you told me that you met an older man who had been in like some kind of like Secret Service kind of job.
Oh, okay. I didn't meet him. My friend Paul did.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, yeah, you're talking. Okay, so this is secondhand, but it was a lengthy conversation with a fellow I know in England. And he had become friends with a gentleman over there who had been recruited into what we know in the movie realm is 007. That's not what they call themselves, but everybody's been to the movies to see James Bond and 007. Well, he was a real-life James Bond-type spy, high level, and he was the one that said that the movies are completely wrong. Spies don't really do that. First of all, they don't ever work by themselves. They're always in a group of four. To make sure that they accomplish their mission and to help each other out. But he talked about his training consisted in part a very stringent training, but in the very beginning he and the rest of the recruits were taken to an abandoned air base in England into some underground bunkers. They were locked away in there for, I believe it was 2 months. And they were basically told that everything that you learned in school was a lie, and we are now going to teach you how the world really works, who runs it, and how it works, because to be an effective spy, you have to know the truth. And what everybody else outside of these walls thinks is true is a complete lie. You're talking about that story.
Exactly. That's the one I'm talking about.
Right.
And, Did he ever get around to telling you how it was run, or telling your friend, or was that just the...
Well, if he did told my friend did not convey it to me. He made it sound like he was only allowed to go so far, because even though he's retired, I guess they're kind of like under a gag order, he can go so far. I don't know that he gave specific details as to what we lied about. He pretty much said, though, that everything you think is true is a lie, as far as the world.
There's that famous CIA quote that I forget which CIA director it was. I don't think it was Colby, but said that we'll know our mission is complete when everything the American people believe is false.
Yeah,
well, I'd say we're there, and we've been there for a long time. I mean, they like to think that this is just something new. So I guess I'll just start with how my motto is question everything. You know,
right.
I love to be wrong. I love to be wrong. It's the only way I've ever learned anything. So I'm always open and scanning and saying, is this right? Is this not right? And John Kaminsky sent me a really interesting email a few weeks ago with a video link from a YouTube channel called Age of Disclosure. And it was about an hour and 20 minutes long, and it's called The Tartarian Empire, The Aether. And I went, wow, what's this about? Oh, my gosh. It took me a couple of days to watch it because it was an hour and 23 minutes, and I wanted to have the time to watch the whole thing. And my mind was going. I went, oh, my gosh, this is right on. And then when I looked, oh, my gosh, there's a bunch of channels out there. But I highly recommend Age of Disclosure. He knows who the enemy is. He names the names. As a matter of fact, he put out a video on New Year's Day. Naming the Jews and using that great quote by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And so this was just amazing to me. And the premise is that when you look at old maps, there's you see it big as life, the Tartarian Empire. I mean, there it is, empire, and it's Russia, China, parts of India, all over the world. Later on, it goes into Europe and then North America, and it's really fascinating. And apparently, whoever these people were, I guess because I guess I should have started earlier. I started looking into a place or the mythology of some place called Hyperborea a long time ago. And the reason I stopped to look at it was because I'm trying to think of his name. I know it like my own. But Chilean man who was a big fan of Uncle Adolf, and I'll think of his name in a minute, but he recommended it. He was talking about it. And I go, Hyperborea, I've never heard of that. So I went and I did that that investigation, and I go, oh, that's fascinating. And so I believe that these Tartarians were actually from Hyperborea originally, that they were probably more spirit than physical beings, like today we're spirit beings having a physical experience, but our focus is more on the physical part of life. We have disconnected ourselves from our spirit in many, many ways. And so just for instance, I don't know what your Bible says, but my Bible says that we were supposed to be doing greater things than Christ.
Right.
And I don't know. I didn't raise anybody from the dead this week. You?
No.
No. I mean, we didn't. And we sit around and we complain about the enemy a lot, but we didn't do those things. So that's one part of the story, how I arrived here. And then the next part of the story, this fall, I was staying with some friends in Washington State, Eastern Washington, and we share a lot of common interests and common background. He was raised in an evangelical home. His his adopted parents were, dad was a pastor and stuff. And so he turned me on to this book. And the book is called The Wonderful Life of Henry Sugar. Have you heard of it?
No.
By any chance?
No.
The Wonderful Life of Henry Sugar plus six other stories. And so when he gave me the book, the other stories have been ripped out. It was just a small little, few pages, maybe a two-hour read of this story. And I go, what happened? No, the other ones aren't important. And how he had heard about this book is that his significant other went to now people who don't freak out, I know this sounds all new age and everything, but just let's just put all our beliefs on hold for a little bit, our belief system, our BS, and just flow with this for a little bit. because I had a hard time with it myself. And she went to a retreat center in Yell'ham, Washington, that's known as, I believe it's known as Ramtha or whatever. But one of the speakers when she was there demonstrated this skill that he developed after reading The Wonderful Life of Henry Sugar. And Henry Sugar was an English, a wealthy, you know, aristocrat that was very bored with life and, you know, nothing held much meaning to him. And he's just going, you know, to the casino at night or to this party or that party. And he was very bored with life. And one day he went into someone's library and found a book, and he was fascinated by the book. And so the book is about a man and some doctors in India who, and I'm just going to go this far and then you can read the book. Doctors in India, a man came in one day and said, I'd like you to bandage up my eyes. I perform with a traveling troupe here, and I'd like you to bandage up my eyes so I couldn't possibly see out of them. And write a letter that you did that and you know, verify that that's what's happened here to me. So they did that, and they went to great lengths to cover up and make sure, you know, he didn't have any vision under the bandages that they put on him. And then the man got up and walked out, walked across the street, saw him cross traffic, and they were just blown away. How's he doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor called him, and it's what he learned from him. And so Henry Sugar decided, well, this would be awesome if I could learn how to do this. And it said it took him 3 years. And it was difficult work, but he did it. And he got so he could tell what the next card was going to be very quickly. And so so this person at the retreat center actually got up and went through brand new deck of cards that somebody else shuffled and whatever. And he went through them and he named every card before they turned it over. And he said he learned to do it. By the technique that the Indian had described to the doctor. And so it's a great read. You have to read it. And so it's a wonderful story. And when I finished it, my friend said to me, you know, that's a true story. And I go, you know, I'm asking that question in my mind. Is this a true story? And he said, and then he told me that story, how he knew it was a true story, because someone went and did it following those instructions. And so, because it read like that, well, now I'll give you a little, I'm kind of a spoiler here. If you just want to go read this, just mute us for a couple minutes. Because what he does is he goes to the casino the first night. And he wins huge. He hadn't been in 3 years. Oh, Mr. Sugar, we haven't seen you. Oh, yes, I've been very busy. Nice to see you, blah, 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 that sort of thing. And he won a little too big. He said, oh, man, I'm calling attention to myself here. And so when he got home that night, he thought he was going to be elated, but instead he was just disgusted. Just, I mean, it was so empty. He goes, what? Oh, my God, this 3 years, and this is not so hollow. And the next morning he got up. And he went to the balcony and he started throwing down 20-pound notes to people in the street. And it created a riot. I mean, and so the knock comes at the door and it's a Bobby. And he comes in and says, well, hey, what are you doing here? And he scolds him and he says, well, you know, if you want to get rid of money, why are you doing this? You should be giving it to orphanages. I mean, just not just, there's better ways to do this. I grew up in an orphanage, and they all need money, and blah, blah, blah. And the cop himself had one of the 20-pound notes. I mean, you know, so it was, and that gave Henry Sugar a brilliant idea. He says, really, orphanages? You mean I could gamble and build orphanages? Well, this would be exciting. So he went to his accountant and said, all right, I want to do this, and I want you to be the bookkeeper on this. I want you to be the accountant. You're going to handle all the money. I'm just going to go out and make it, and you're going to handle it. And eventually, and so that's working great. They're building orphanages all over, which is part of the rest of our story here tonight. And in Las Vegas, he gets caught. And so you got to read that part. Or almost gets, they're on to him, and how the rest of the story ends. I'm not going to tell you the rest of it, but it is a great read, and it'll take you about 2 hours. And I highly recommend it. And so from there, my friend said, okay, the next thing you want to read, and he actually sat down and read me part of the first book. It's a series of six by a man named Baird Spaulding, and it's called The Life and Teachings of Masters of the Far East, I think is the actual title. And so I said, wow, this is fascinating. Well, it's people, and they all said the same thing that the Indian had told Henry Sugar and Henry Sugar had done. And it's these stories, I think they're mostly Americans, that I think it was 13. I may have the numbers wrong. Don't say, oh, she didn't know what she's talking about. No, I just haven't read the book for months now. But a group went to India as skeptics, and they took recording devices, like stenographers, and took their equipment with them, and they wanted to show that these masters, the yogis, the people that supposedly had these powers, were just frauds, that they were hypnotizing people and just swindling people. And so they went, and 3 years later, they were all firm believers that they weren't swindling people, that they really had these powers. And they took them back. And it's all the things that we see in the Bible, like walking on water and feeding, people, with no food and things like that. And so it's a really interesting tale. And again, it reads like a book. And it started out the big metaphysical movement here in the 30s and 40s. And it was a bestseller then. And it was a man named Baird Spaulding, who grandfather had set up a foundation in India, and he was an engineer by training and different things. So that's a fascinating read too. So my mind was kind of open and to this. And so then the Tartarian information came to me through John Kaminsky, and I haven't been able to stop watching it since. I grew up in a town, Lynn, Massachusetts. I call it, say, Lynn, Lynn, the city of sin. You never go out the way you came in. That was the little rhyme about it. But we had magnificent buildings, like the public library. And so I look at these and say, oh my gosh, it is so ornate. It's like Greco-Roman architecture and things like that. So when I saw this, all of it made sense. That these Tartarians had been around the world, and you see the same architecture everywhere. Like, for instance, St. Patrick's Cathedral. You can see them all over, in South America. All over the world, you'll see the same cathedral. And so what's with that? Look at all the state buildings, the state capitals. They all have... I did a search on this, and I'm going to make a little video on it. 45 of the 50 state capitals all share the same architectural features, the dome on top, all this. I mean, it's remarkable and so ornate inside, and it's just crazy. And you see the courthouses and things. So what I'm getting to is that the people that occupy them now didn't build them. The dates are ridiculous for what they talk about. Like they talk about the not Vanderbilt, Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie's mansion. I mean, this place is enormous. And they say he built it in a year. Yeah, right, pal. Buildings like that take a good 10, 15 years to build. But they just supplanted whoever was in there and took them. And we don't know how they got rid of them. But there's so it's very interesting. And I love this quote that someone made. His name is Light or Darkness. He said, because I started looking into the state capitals, and I'm going, there's no way. The one in Helena, Montana, no freaking way. Even if you say, well, maybe New York City, New York could have one like that in Albany. Maybe they had the money to do that then and the population and the tax base. But they didn't have the tax base then. Taxes weren't instituted till much later. So where did they get the money to build a building like that? So here it is. It's Great Falls, Montana, the courthouse, And so these people show that there were mudflows. There was things that happened that flooded out the bottom stories of a lot of these buildings. And that's part of it. And so he says, I've got a good one for you here in Great Falls, Montana. The courthouse with all the mudflood signs just got a multi-million dollar copper roof replacement that took 3 years to complete. Okay, 3 years. The history is it was built in 1897 and 3 years by All Local Stone. It's an entire city block with a huge dome built by cowboys in 3 years. It took 3 years for a roof today. I mean, that's what you say. And I go, that's ridiculous. There's no way these buildings could have been built at the time. Now, Montana, just to say, now, people are going to say, well, Anaconda Silver was wealthy. Yeah, Anaconda Silver was wealthy. But the problem with Montana is all the wealth in Montana always got drained back east because they had raw materials in Montana. It was very expensive to get to ship things overland. You know, they're not on a coast. And so all the Eastern establishment money would come in and build the mines, build everything. So all the profit got sucked back out east again. It never went into Montana. Montana was a boom and bust state. And in 1897, 1910, when the Great Fire was, I mean, people were living in log cabins and at best rough-hewn timber houses. There's no way these huge, monstrous government buildings were built then. No way.
Well, you know, actually that fits in with the writings of Stephen Collins and Barry Fell and E. Raymond Capt and all the rest of the biblical archaeologists who show evidence of Caucasians, because from what I've looked at so far, Tartary was our people, and that these people have been all over the earth, like Kennewick Man up in Washington State. He's been verified to be at least 7,000 years old by carbon dating, and he's a perfectly preserved mummy that they found along the Kennewick River up there, and he's a Caucasian. So,
He's an Indian. The Indian said so, and they came and they took that body right away.
Right. Well, they finally won that one. Normally, the so-called Amerindians, they usually win to hide the fact that the white race has been here for many multiple thousands of years. They usually win and get to hide that, but Kennewick had enough people with money and prestige behind it to where they finally could analyze the body, and they proved it. So that one, they've even got a computer-generated model of what the man's face looked like, and obviously a Caucasoid. But even in the online dictionary, just like Kazaria, people said, well, you're making that up. Well, you go look in the encyclopedias like Britannica and even a good dictionary, and Kazaria is in there. Well, guess what? Tartary's in here, and here's what this dictionary says, and we'll dissect this in a minute. A vast region of Eastern Europe and Northern Asia controlled by the Mongols in the 1200s and 1300s. It extended as far east as the Pacific Ocean under the rule of Genghis Khan. Now, first of all, the Mongols, no, they didn't control anything. Second of all, the Mongols sure as hell didn't build all these monolithic structures. And Genghis Khan, that's already been shown that he was an Adamite. He may not have been an Israelite, but he was definitely an Adamite. So, you know, this whole modern dictionary cover-up trying to hide the fact of our people, but it would explain why all the religions of the world, all the non-white religions of the world, their gods are all described as basically fair-skinned, tall individuals with reddish hair and beards, just like the Aztecs, the Incas over here in Central America and South America, and over in the Orient, the Ainu people in Japan were the rulers for many, many centuries. And you go look at them, and you can tell the original Ainu people were Caucasians. The Brahma of India, you go back in history, again, the white race is shown there. So it's not that hard for me to conceive that this Tartaria was a region that extended virtually around all over the earth and was the hegemony of our people. Does that make sense to you?
And what do we have left to show for it? Tartar sauce. That's it. That's the only mention they get in our culture today. Tartar sauce.
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable that some, and you look at the, and I look at the artwork, like someone that, like Sylvie from New Earth videos. I mean, she's Bulgarian, but she puts the most beautiful artwork from the so-called Middle Ages in her videos. And I'm telling you, it's all our people. I mean, yeah. And it's in the Tartarians, they're very quickly listed. You see Tartary, and then you see Scythia, or Scythia, I don't know how you pronounce it. But you see that group mentioned. So this is all like a vast cover-up. And, you know, like the places like the Bosnian pyramids, for instance, and all the pyramids in the world that are covered over, that mud flood would explain that. And they believe that there were two instances of that there was a reset in the, like, sometime in the 1600s, and another as early as like the 1840s or so. Mm-hmm. And when you see photographs from now, I don't know if you've come across these videos yet, when you see the photographs and the streets in these huge cities with these buildings are empty. And somebody's going to say, oh, no, that's just because it was the time-lapse photography and the people didn't show up in it. No, you can see photographs of time-lapse photography where the people are there and they're just blurred.
Right.
I mean, it's incredible. And then when you look at, so how did they wipe these people out? You know, we have, you know, the story of the fall of the Titans. We have the giants. I mean, it's a history that they have tried to sweep under the carpet and bamboozle us with. And there's it just doesn't hold water. And so right. There's a man named, I don't know if you've had a chance to see him, is Anatoly Fomenko.
No,
Fomenko's an interesting Russian who says that the timeline is completely, completely wrong. Let me see if I don't think I left that up. Him and an associate, Nasovsky, I think, I'm probably brutalizing his name, and I apologize for that. But they say what they did to hide, you know, these eras is they messed with the timeline. They made things that were you just read it. And matter of fact, like he says that we think you know, X, you know, we do Roman numerals for the years, and that XI or X would look like 11, right? If you knew Roman numerals. But he says no, because it was Cyrillic, and X was Cyrillic for Christ, for CH. That was the symbol for Christ, the X. And we know that's why we say Xmas and things like that, right? And the one would have been the first year of Christ's life. And so everything's messed up. Read Fomenko. It's fascinating, and there's lots and lots of volumes of it. I'm just scratching the surface of it. So everything we've been taught is a total lie. And I look back and how they've patted themselves on the back and built all these things. For instance, somebody... I think it's UAP is the name of the channel. He's showing that the buildings in Christchurch, New Zealand, were predated the settlers. Excuse me, I got to cough for a second here. And their backstory is, oh, we just sent people ahead to build those European-type buildings so that the settlers would feel at home when they got here. But they were living in shacks. Does that make sense?
No. Well, the other thing that's interesting is you try to get something built today with any kind of craftsmanship, and it's almost impossible. So where, at what time could you put together a number of craftsmen to build these wondrous buildings when you can't even get it today? We can't even come close to it. You know, a lot of this... A lot of this makes perfect sense, but again, that was a good thing to bring up what my friend over in England told me about the 007 spy. The fact that the very first thing they did to him was go in and tell him, you've got to forget everything you learned in school because we're now going to tell you the true history of the world. Well, if they're hiding the true history from all the rest of us, but they're going to go ahead and tell the inner circle and the spies, well, that's an obvious indication that, that what we're talking about is true. That, you know, we literally have been lied to about practically everything, haven't we?
Everything. I've never been able to get to a topic that I didn't find out that it was an absolute lie. So, yeah, it's just crazy. And people that may be listening tonight, I know there's some folks that maybe listen to your show that know about this. And so I urge them to call in and join this conversation. It's a difficult subject to handle without video, without photographs and things. But just do yourself a favor and pull up Lynn, Massachusetts Public Library. Go ahead. Just do that if you're listening to this. When you're listening to it, go to Google Images and then look at the interior. And you tell me if that was built in the mid to late 1800s, like they say it was. There's no way. Yeah, Lynn was maybe booming then. It was a shoe town, but it doesn't match. It just does not match all this Roman architecture here in Gainesville. There's a building called the Hippodrome. It's a theater. The huge so-called Romanesque, you know, columns. And actually, what it comes down to is that a lot of people that are doing the research on this say that the entire Roman Empire story is a cover story. It was never the Romans. It was always Tartary. And if you look at old maps, you don't see the Roman Empire listed anywhere. As a matter of fact, Italy's right there, just little Italy. I mean, it's not a big deal about the time when it was supposed to be flourishing. And so what, you know, they've made up the Roman Empire, you know, to make us think that's who built this stuff when it wasn't indeed.
So
and then
then the people that we've known as the Romans sort of were squatters on stuff that had already been built and established by the Tartarians, is what you're saying then?
No, maybe not. Maybe they didn't exist at all. And the squatters would be the monarchies, that the monarchies, when they were able to defeat the Tartarians, and we don't know how they did that, how they emptied those cities, but when they were able to do that, that they just went in and took over their real estate.
Wow, it's a few years back I would have said this sounds like BS to me, but like I said, right in front of me is a dictionary definition of it, and it goes to show you that now I've been 65 years old, and I've been a digger my whole life. I go down a lot of rabbit holes, and I've never once heard this mentioned. That's phenomenal to me.
What gives me great hope about this information, though, is that the beginning of Age of Disclosures video on the Tartarian Empire in the ether is that a woman had gone to the zoo in Berlin, and she says the air was different. It was just energizing and so pleasant. She couldn't wait to go there again. And it's because all these buildings actually had free energy. They were able to create energy, healthy energy from the ether, not like the dirty energy we have today, you know, and we're coming up on this 5G nonsense that makes people sick. No, this was health-giving. Health-giving energy. The grand organs that are in these things that we now call cathedrals, they don't think they were cathedrals. They thought they were energy, you know, power plants. And you look at some of the stuff on them and you go, wow, yeah, makes sense to me. But these huge pipe organs, the Hammond Castle in Gloucester, Massachusetts, was supposedly built by this wealthy industrialist named John Hayes Hammond. And it took supposedly he built this castle in 1 year. Yeah, right, pal. And but the pipe organ took 10 years to build. Really? I mean, are we planning this whole timeline here? And the amazing thing to this is that nobody has any construction photos of these places. Really, if you're building something in 1887, photography is well established, then where are the photographs?
Right. We got photographs of fallen Confederate soldiers from the 1860s, but you don't have any construction photos 30 years, 40 years later.
Exactly. Exactly. And how far this spread in the West, like Salt Lake City. I mean, it was 50 years, supposedly, you know, because the timeline's all messed up. 50 years after the settlers arrived, they've got a huge city already lined out in streets and the Mormon Tabernacle built. No, it's all nonsense. I'm here to make people whistle. Just go look yourself.
Yeah, we're just trying to get a discussion, a narrative going on it, and hope that our diggers will dig some more and we'll all piece this together. But we're just getting into this, but somehow this has to fit. Father would not reveal this at this time if it doesn't fit somehow, some way. So my question would be, first of all, to you, Patricia, would be why? What do you suppose is the fallen ones, the cabal? What is the purpose of hiding all this, do you think? I mean, are they afraid of a rebellion? Or is this just a method to keep us dumb, down, and unaware of our history so that we're more controllable?
Well, I think it comes down to so we're more controllable, because the day we wake up and realize the spirit beings that we really are and that we really do have an enormous amount of power that we could be harnessing, we don't just get it. I mean, it's going to take time to develop that you know, spirituality again. Then they're in trouble. Then all of a sudden Tartary's back in a huge foe again. They want to totally defeat us. I mean, they've always been jealous of us. I mean, you know how the cabal always has to tell the truth somewhere, right? They always have to put it out in cartoons or in, you know, comic books or on, television, things like The Simpsons, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the deals. They have to tell the truth somewhere, and then it's not wrong. So somebody, and I believe it was Mudflood, who's a Canadian, and this is a blog. I'm not thrilled with blogs. I like videos better than blogs. But anyway, he was talking about how he came across this cartoon, and it was called the He-Man character, He-Man, Masters of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was sometime in the 80s. I missed it. I didn't see it. But guess what He-Man's name is?
What?
Take a wild guess. Come on. But my friend Wendy just said, John. And I go, no, his name was Prince Adam.
Oh.
And he's a blonde. Look, go to your Google Images and type in He-Man, and you'll see him. And so he's fighting him, and he's fighting this arch enemy. It's called Skeletor, the evil. And they talk about how they came in through this portal, and how he's always fighting to save, you know, his people from this evil empire. There was a man named Noah Fredericks, and he actually was the first one that I heard this from, that the Bible actually has a lot of technology in it. And he would explain what the Bible was really saying. And that it wasn't, you know, we're not these, you know, horse and cart, oxen and cart people way back in time, that he actually saw, you know, flying machines in the Bible or things like that. And I know it sounds ludicrous, but when you hear him out, it makes total sense. You go, oh, can't argue with that. But he's the one that announced to me that mythology is really just distorted history. So I think it's important.
I've thought that for years. For instance, to ward off werewolves and vampires, garlic and silver. And when you get into natural health, guess which two things fight off virtually every known fungus, bacteria, virus? Silver and garlic. Two of the greatest two of the greatest fighters, antibiotics, natural antibiotics there are, silver and garlic. So it doesn't, you know, and they hit it in stories of vampires and werewolves, but the vampires and werewolves were the bad people that we have to live amongst. That was to teach people that just because they may look like you, they can turn into werewolves or vampires, shapeshift or whatever you want to call it. Though they look like you during the day, at night they could come and suck your blood or kill you. So
right, that's they live, right? They live. You can see them, right? Exactly.
Right. The movie They Live talks about this. The other thing, real quick, to give support to what you're saying, is something I read many years ago, that Nikola Tesla didn't necessarily invent the things that he built, the Tesla coil and all of his theories, because Tesla himself said that he got his ideas from the Koine Greek of the scriptures, because Tesla's father was a priest, Orthodox priest, and he could speak and read, write in Greek, the scriptures, and Tesla also could read, write, speak Greek. And he took the manuscripts in the original language, and because it's a very picturesque language, much like ancient Hebrew is, it's almost pictographic. There's a lot of there's a lot within the letters that make up a word and how the letters are put together. And he said he used that knowledge of Greek and reading the scriptures to figure a lot of this stuff out. That embedded in those scriptures was a lot of this information.
Right, and so, but you know, information that you'll come across if you get in and dig through what people are presenting. And I know it was in the first Age of Disclosure video that someone was saying that Tesla was actually another fiction that they put on us to think that free energy was something that we could have had but didn't have because, you know, Tesla was, you know, Edison, you know, got the top hand that in that scenario, and Tesla was, you know, put away by Westinghouse. So what they're saying is all these buildings, and you see them, I mean, when you see the buildings and the decoration on them, it's all over the world, Angkor Wat, all everywhere over the world, you say, oh my God, it makes total sense that there was free energy and clean energy. We know the Pyramid of Giza gives off, you know, power to this day. I mean, that's why the Luxor in Las Vegas has that light shining out the top of the pyramid. It's an homage to the fact that the Pyramid of Giza is still giving off energy. And, you know, then you even look, even things in the early 1900s, there's a hotel in St. Augustine. I want to go see it, and I just haven't had a chance yet, but one of these days we're going to go over there and look at it. It's called the Ponce de Leon Hotel. And when you saw the original photos that they took of it, I mean, after it was built, of course, there weren't any there when it was being built, but it has all this apparatus outside, all these poles that look like, you know, lightning rods sometimes with mercury balls on top. The fireplaces inside have a metal backing, and then these andirons just look like, you know, something really interesting. I mean, they don't look like the kind of andirons we use today. And those were free energy devices that they were able to take energy out of the atmosphere, out of the ether, and create free, healthy energy for people. And so when you look at that, that's really interesting. And that brings me back to these people being probably Hyperborean originally, because, you know, I think we talked about this the other day, that the Ponce de Leon Hotel, it was supposed to be for the really affluent people of the day, like the, you know, the Rockefellers, and Flagler was the original owner, and he was the partner with Rockefeller, I believe. And so, how many private bathrooms were there in the Ponce de Leon Hotel? There was one. One? You really think all these millionaires want to wait in line for the bathroom in the morning? Really? The the Palace of Versailles. Huge. I mean, has, you know, 1,000 servants there or more. Guess how many bathrooms it had? Guess how many toilets it had? One. I mean, the stench used to be so bad that the king finally decreed that they had to clean the halls once a week, and I'd be doing it every day. I mean, now, that doesn't make any sense that somebody, the French, would build something like that with that big without, you know, facilities.
Right.
But obviously, these people were more spirit than body, and they didn't need the facility.
Boy, there's just the amount of questions that get raised just keeps going up and up and up. you know, it fits in with what the word tells us about there'd be a great increase in knowledge at the end of the age, that the hidden things would be made known. And this all sort of fits. It all fits with the great awakening and the unveiling of all this hidden information will cause mankind, at least those who are spiritual in nature, to rise to a new level, I would think. How about you?
Well, I'm delighted to see a lot of these channels have, like, some of them have, like, 35,000 subscribers already. I'm like, yes, yes. And the fact that it wasn't that long ago that in the 1800s that we had free energy and healthy energy, and I mean, shoot, I mean.
Well, you know, that's not hard to believe, because look within a relatively recent history. We're going to go back just around 100 years, okay? Henry Ford designed the Model T to run on alcohol, not petroleum, because petroleum requires a lot of refining and it's dirty. And so Henry Ford said, I'm going to make the car run on alcohol, which is easy to make, it's cheap, and virtually pollution-free. And yet, what are we running our cars on? Gasoline. Why? Because the power people took Henry Ford and shut him down in his attempt to produce the alcohol-driven car and pushed everybody into petroleum because that's where their money was. And besides, it was dirty, and these people want us sick and ill and everything. And here again, too, Henry Ford found out that you can use hemp oil to make plastic that's 5 times stronger, and it's biodegradable. And we don't have to tear the earth up to get it like we do for drilling for oil. You just grow hemp, one of the easiest things on the earth to grow.
And it revitalizes the soil.
it revitalizes the soil because it will suck all the chemicals, the glyphosate, and all the herbicides and pesticides. The hemp roots will actually absorb all that. So your first couple plantings, you destroy the crop because they're cleansing the soil. Then after that, you harvest it and you'll have perfectly good, healthy plants. I mean, how much more easy could it get, and yet we're not doing it, and the power structure resists us doing it. So therefore, what you're talking about here is not hard to conceive at all, because we're living it right now, just in those couple areas that we just now talked about.
Exactly. I mean, it's never anything to benefit the people. It's all to benefit the ruling class.
Right.
Never anything for us. Police aren't here for what they say they're here for. The banks aren't here. The money's not here for what they say. It's all complete and utter fraud.
Well,
we're jumping around to the subject. Can I just bring up the Bosnian pyramids for a minute here?
Sure.
And then go to the next one. Bosnian pyramids are the largest pyramids in the world. And when I had my radio show, Sacred Cow Barbecue, I was fortunate to have Dr. Sam Osmanagic on. He's actually lives in Houston, but he's from Bosnia. And he was he did his PhD in pyramid studies. And there it was, the largest one right in his own backyard. And it's so incredible that every government in the world, there's pyramids all over the world. It's obvious. step pyramids and different, you know, different shape pyramids, but they're all pyramids and they're covered up now that with grass going growing on them or in the woods somewhere. And and these governments all resist you knowing about them. No, they deny that's not a pyramid. No, that's just a trash heap. No, that's not it. And why? Because when he started excavating the big pyramid, I think they call it the Pyramid of the Sun, in Bosnia, they found out the healing energy inside that pyramid is incredible. I mean, a woman, he was giving a talk, and he said, how many of you have been to the Bosnian pyramid? And a woman, you know, raised her hand and stood up, and she says, yeah. She says, I'm 70 years old, and I was running through the pyramid with a wheelbarrow. She said, your DNA just loves being in there. There's a woman who can't control her blood pressure. There's no blood pressure medication they can give her. So once, I think he told me, every 3 months, she comes, spends a couple hours in the pyramid, and then she goes and she's fine for 3 more months. Michael Tellinger, who's, you know, an arch-liberal from South Africa, he was doing this video of him, and they're saying, do you notice anything physically? And they're crouching through these tunnels. I mean, it's not like they're walking upright. They're crunching, you know, crouching all through them, you know, shuffling along. And he says, well, yeah, I have a knee injury, and my knee doesn't hurt.
Wow.
I mean, just healing, very healing. And so all these places, the Skeletor, you know, whoever, you know, this evil force is that's come in and is opposing us, they want to cover all this up and keep us in subjection, keep us their slaves. And and the day we wake up, we're in trouble.
Well, that's what they don't want. They don't want us to awaken. I believe that's why Yeshua told us that ye shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. They've tried to obscure and hide the truth, and that's our job, is to dig it up and present the truth. You know, and another area that would support what you're saying, and a lot of people, again, I might think this sounds all crazy, but really, is it? Antarctica. Okay, why is it that every country, and I believe it's every single one, but it's certainly all of the prominent countries, have agreed and signed a treaty? Now, this is the only treaty in existence that I know of that every country has signed on to. Every country has agreed that nobody is allowed to explore Antarctica without government permission. Now, when have you ever heard the countries all get together on any topic, let alone something as obscure as that? Huh?
They're all in on it. They're all in on it. They want to maintain politics. That poly means many. Ticks means blood-sucking creatures. That's all they are. I mean, and they're siphoning off the health and wealth of the people just to, you know, rule over us. And you know, hope, is it coming to an end, or are we going to be this? People say there's a reset. Seems to be every 200 years. We're due for one. Is it going to be another mud flood? Is it going to be another, you know, plasma event that wipes out the population? I mean, what did happen to these populations? I mean, what happened to them? I mean, and they showed that they repopulated them with these orphan trains, and you can see. Go look it up. I mean, on YouTube, you will see the photographs, and you thought, where did they get all these children to repopulate these places with? And to me, one of the things that this points out to me is where the, if that's true, and it seems to be true, I'd love to be wrong, but if it's true, that would explain the dysfunction in our culture. You know, I know we like to think that we're good Israelites, but and the law is written on our hearts, but I don't see that. What I see is a lot of alcoholism. Not our generation, we can say, oh, it's because of the influence of the glass toilet in our lives, you know, and all the programming that we've endured. But we look back and, you know, multi-generational things like people's grandfathers and great-grandfathers, were abusive to their children, beat their children, or I have a family that I work with emotion code and things, and they were all molested by the father. Other people molested by the grandfather. I mean, this is dysfunctional. This is not healthy. And how did that come into our culture? Well, all you have to do is take a man out of the home for one generation, and three or four generations are going to be screwed up because of it. So if there were orphans that they repopulated these cities with, that would explain the dysfunction in our culture.
Yeah, it would show the disconnect in the raising up of the children the way the Bible talks about. And I was blessed to be raised that way, so I thought it was normal for everybody. Over the years, I have to confess, because of what I do and who I am, I've had a lot of people tell me their stories in private, and so I've got I've never written all this down. I carry it around in my head, but I've got literally over 1,000 personal testimonies of different things that have happened. And I've come to find out that I truly was blessed. Most of the people that I have talked to did not get raised in a situation that I was raised in. And so it was not normal. I was actually blessed above and beyond to actually grow up on a farm. And I ate real food that we grew ourselves. And we had animals and chickens and cows. And we ate deer. So we ate natural. Everything was natural. The water came out of the ground was spring water. And that's what I grew up on. And a colonel in the Air Force told me when I went in for to have my molars taken out, this colonel from Lackland Air Force Base came in to do the demonstration, because I was a demonstration for all the dentists at the air base. And he looked at my charts and looked at my reports, and he said, "Damn, Dan," he goes, "you're as healthy as a horse." And I said, I was just kidding. I just thought he was just trying to make fun because he's getting ready to put me under. But now that I look back at it, that was the great start I was given by my beloved parents. And I now realize that was way and above normal. And I've talked to so many. I had a friend of mine from Boston. He came out to the house, and I lived in Michigan, and shared a meal. And we had an organic steak that had been flown in. And I said, "Okay, Kenny," I said, "we're going to have a steak and some vegetables and a salad because we're trying to keep starches away from proteins." And he goes, "Vegetables? I don't eat vegetables." I said, "You don't eat any vegetables?" He said, "No, I don't eat any vegetables." I said, "My God." And then I got a phone call from my children back in Pennsylvania, and I was talking to them, and at the end I said, "You know, I love you, and I hope to talk to you again soon." And I hung up the phone, and Kenny says, "Do you always say that?" I said, "Do I always say what?" He said, "Do you always tell your children you love them?" I said, "Well, of course I do." I said, "I end every conversation with 'I love you.'" He goes, "My God, I've never heard that." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "You're 40, like he was 46, 47. I said, "You're telling me at 47 years old, nobody in your family has said, 'I love you'? Not even your parents?" He said, "I've never been told 'I love you.'" I said, "Man, that's sick." That's sick. And Patricia, I can't tell you how many of our ladies have recounted stories to me similar to what you're saying, that they have themselves, not somebody else, they themselves have been victims of abuse, and generally from somebody either in the family or a friend of the family. The worst case, was a young lady, well, relatively young. I mean, after all, I'm getting to be an old man, so everybody's young. But a lady told me that when she was 5 years old, her stepfather started to pimp her out, and he pimped her out for 10 years. So from the age of 5 years old to 15 years old, she was prostituted out to men that this so-called stepfather, he wasn't a father, obviously. He was a monster. But that's the kind of BS I've listened to for years and why I fight so hard to bring down the evil of this world. That's my goal. If Father gives me enough lifespan and an opportunity, I will destroy every single violator of his law that I come across. I will kill them all. It would not bother me at all. I will put them to death for the crimes that they've committed. It is sick beyond imagination. And here's the kid.
I have friends. I have women that I know, two, exactly, that were molested as infants.
Yeah, that's
raped
sick.
As infants.
That's
it's
sick.
It's completely sick. And this is these are white families. This isn't some, you know, in some black neighborhoods. These are white families.
Oh yeah, the ones all I'm right, talking so, about are white.
So there's something going on that went on in the orphan trains. Explain this. And why? Where were all these orphanages? Someone, a friend of mine was telling me that. Yeah, a friend of mine said he grew up in Colorado, and there used to be orphanages all over. You know, my friend, you know, in his early 70s, and his friend about that age. Orphan. What happened to all the orphanages? Oh, it's just culture. No, there was something else going on.
Yes.
And so now here, okay, so I'll put out all the weird stuff to people. And if they're going to do another reset again, like try to kill us all off for some reason, what are they going to do to repopulate the place? Where are they going to get their slave labor that we are? And they say that's what they think a lot of the missing children are actually being held in these deep underground military bases. And that's what they'll be brought out to do that. They'll be raised in there, and they'll be adults by then, and so on and so forth.
Let me ask you a question, Patricia. Do you believe the Dead Sea Scrolls and the other writings that talk about a great battle at the end of the age between the children of light and the children of darkness? I'm just asking a personal opinion.
I'm not sure if at the end of the age is still to come, or if we've had those battles already. I'm just not clear on the timeline.
Well, the children of darkness still operate amongst us, so I'm assuming we have not had it. But I can see it coming.
I'm assuming we've lost, and hopefully there's another one coming. Hopefully. I'd like to see that. And it doesn't really matter when whites are outnumbered. We still fight. I hope that's right. I hope so for Europe's sake. I hope so for South Africa's sake.
I hope so for the sake of all mankind, because all mankind's being abused by these degenerates.
Yes, the sociopaths that run everyone and cull the other sociopaths from the other cultures to be involved in the same, you know, tyranny that we live under and abuse. I mean, it's terrible. And there's actually an East Indian man, and he wrote a book about how it'll be a terrible thing to get rid of all the whites. That whites are what bring normalization to a society. I mean,
the scripture says that the whole world is in travail waiting for the sons of Yahweh to be manifested. As far as I'm concerned, that's the only thing that's stopping a takedown of these monsters is the righteous men of Yahweh to take a stand and realize who they are and that the power is in our hands and say no more.
Yeah, it's time to wake up. It's time to wake up, and maybe it doesn't have to be about. Maybe it's just raising our consciousness enough. You know, just think. I would like to, if we could have telepathy again. You know, anybody that has a near-death experience, or mostly a near-death experience, they all talk about how they didn't use words on the other side. It was all through mental telepathy. They knew exactly what someone was saying, and you know. And they knew it instantly. So I think this is a part of us that's been cut off. So just think, if we all had telepathy again, there could be no more liars. We would always know when someone was lying and trying to cheat us. It would put liars and cheats out of business overnight.
We have a slight form of that, and it's called looking them in the eye. If you'll notice, a liar will never want to look you in the eye, because the eyes are the windows of the soul. And when I was in the courthouses, I noticed that the Jewish prosecutors and the Jewish lawyers that I dealt with never wanted to look you in the eye, especially when they knew you knew who they were. Once they figured out that you were on to them, they backed off. They actually had a look of fear on them, and they would not look you in the eye. It reminded me of the scriptures that said that Yeshua, when he was gazed upon the people, and there were supernatural angels that had the same ability, but they said his glaze was like a fire. Okay, I believe that a spiritually awakened Israelite, white man, when he is spiritually awake and full of righteous indignation, a fire literally burns within him, and when he gazes at these people, they cannot stand it. It just tears them up. I mean, so in a way, the Father has let me see, at least in my life, a little bit of that. My children will bear witness to it, because all of my children, we kid around, said that when they were growing up, the one thing that they could not stand was the evil look of Dad. That when Dad would get that stare, they called it the stare, it terrified them. Okay? It terrified them. And I didn't even know I had it, huh?
Yeah. Well, it would be great if everybody had, you know, this ability to communicate without words, because words have, the devil wrote the dictionary at this point. They changed the meanings of the words and things, but if we really knew someone's intent, that's what I'd like to see a return to. That would stop this overnight. This would return the planet to goodness, because none of these parasites would be left to rule over us. And we would know that.
Right. That's a good point. You know, I've always said language is the science of trying to convey your thoughts to another person.
That's correct. And if you didn't have to fumble around with words, and you could just do it mentally through images and stuff, there'd be no miscommunication ever.
Correct. That's right. How many times do we miscommunicate with the people we know? It happens quite often.
And the other thing is that people could understand that there's a oneness, that there's a oneness to everything, that we're all one. We would never, ever hurt anyone, because we would realize we were hurting ourselves. And I think that's what the Tartarian Empire was built on, goodness and honesty and truth. That they worship truth.
So what I've read about them, they would fit the description of the angelic Adamites when they were first put down here, wouldn't they?
Yes, absolutely. And I think
before the fall.
Right, like that. Brother Murray, Pastor Murray, the Shepherd's Church, he talks
Arnold.
About the first age.
Arnold Murray.
Right. Yeah, I think that's obvious. We see artifacts, but where are the bones? But you know, that these mudflood things are interesting. Now, not all of them. I can see how some buildings would be built with a basement with some windows that will light, but the windows would be a rectangular or a square shape above the ground and stuff. They wouldn't be below the ground, but there are tons and tons and tons of videos out there showing these cities being excavated out of this mud. And then we have like these buildings that they like to say were carved out of rocks, like Petra and things like that. No way, man. Those were existing buildings that were flooded afterwards with some kind of, you know, magma type thing that solidified around them, and then they just happened to chisel out the door to get back into the door. And then you see, why are these buildings so huge? The giants were all here, and there seems to have been good giants and bad giants. I mean, very little of our reality is based on truth. That's all I can say.
Well, here's the point we're trying to make, I think. As we go forward, apparently there's a lot going to be revealed very, very soon. All the indications that I see say that. Perhaps what we're talking about here, the point we're trying to make, is that people need to keep an open mind in the very near future so that when the truth is revealed, it doesn't overwhelm you, okay? Don't put so much faith in the lies that you've been taught all this time. Keep your mind open. As the scripture says, trust not in your own understanding, but lean upon the Father, okay? And the same way, don't trust. Even Q has talked about that. Be careful who you trust. The very institutions and people that we were trained as little children growing up to trust are the very people we're finding out that are abusing us. Look at the clergy and the Roman Catholics that are involved in pedophilia and trafficking of children. Okay, look at the just now, right up the road here in Polk County, Florida. Not too far from where you're at right now. Polk County just arrested 277 traffickers and child rapists, and they were all medical and police officers. 277. So these weren't drunks and derelicts and drug users on the street. These were the people you should be able to trust.
Yeah. You know, I did a show this morning. I was with Andy Hitchcock,
yeah.
And we invited my friend John Lamb and two new friends of mine. You should have them on. Nikki and Casey Fisher, and they were talking about a man. His name is Jeff Winehouse, Weinhaus, and I think Free Jeff. You'd have to go to Andy's site and see. I don't have that up in front of me right now. But he was in Missouri, an investigative journalist. He was really concerned about the corruption. He was a strong Christian and concerned about the corruption that was so rampant in their government that he was running for office all the time and didn't get elected. But he was writing, and he was naming names and exposing the governor and other people for their crimes. And so they decided to teach him a lesson. And so they went in and they confiscated his computers. You know, just confiscated everything, got a warrant, didn't arrest him. Well, a month or so goes by, and they call him up and say, oh, we're ready to give you your equipment back, but we don't want to come to your house. We want you to meet us at such and such a place, and we'll give it to you there. That should have been a red flag for him, and I'm sure it was. He was armed. But so he meets them, and it's the FBI and some, you know, the local police or whoever. And he gets out of the car, and 16 seconds later, they open fire on him. They shoot him four times in the chest and the head. And they didn't know that he happened to have a spy watch on that was recording the whole thing. And so, the story goes on and on. And when they gave him a public pretender that didn't do anything. I mean, it's completely obvious. You can actually see the video online and see that he didn't pull a gun, that what they did to him. And he's been in prison for 7 years now.
Yeah, that's
7 years. Another political prisoner. And the worst thing I heard in this entire interview, Dan, was that while he was in court, they put a shock collar on him around his leg. And so if he tried to speak or say anything, they would shock him with so many volts of energy just to keep him quiet.
Yeah, here's the thing. People out there, the normies, they call them the normies, the people that are completely ignorant of what's really going on in this world, they'll sit there and they'll say, well, he must have deserved it. They wouldn't do that. It's only when you come up against tyranny that you find out it exists. You have to challenge it.
Exactly. Yeah,
that was my wake-up call.
They're just watching Law and Order and Perry Mason and, like that and thinking that's real. Matlock and thinking that's real.
Well,
but there's going to be a protest if we can't have if anybody is in Missouri, there'll be a protest, a yellow vest protest in front of the governor's mansion, the state building, which is the governor's where the governor's office is, in Jefferson City, Missouri, this month on the 18th. And I would that's a 2-day drive for me at best. 3 is easier, but that's a long drive, and I'm maybe gonna go. I hope to go, but if you're in that area, somewhere around there where it's a short drive for you, please go, and get a yellow vest at Home Depot, and they're gonna present a clemency petition to the governor for him. And it's a new governor, so maybe this will work. I don't know. And you know what? Whenever Nikki talks to this man, he's not concerned for himself. He's really concerned for all the activists that are out there. Activists.
Well, go ahead.
You've got to have her on sometime. Her story is absolutely shocking, too. She did 8 years in prison.
Casey
Fisher?
Something
she didn't do. Yeah, Nikki Fisher.
Oh, Nikki. Okay.
Nikki. Yeah.
Okay. Who's Casey?
Yeah, Casey's her husband.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got you. I had it backwards then. Okay, so yeah. Nikki and Casey's the husband. All right. Well, let them pass on my contact information. I would love to have them come on and explain to the folks what the hell's really going on. I mean, that was the purpose I started this radio show 19 years ago. To give a voice to the people that are suppressed, because I lived it. I lived it in the late 90s when I came up against the tyranny and in trying to defend an innocent person. And so I had up close and personal experience with the criminality and the obviously the Jewish question came into it in this particular case very heavily. And just the fact that what we call law enforcement in the court system is not anything like what the electronic toilet is portraying.
Exactly.
Not even close.
Yeah, she told me something that the state of Tennessee does not have self-defense as a defense. You are not allowed to use self-defense. So if someone's beating you up and about to kill you, you better let them do it, because if you respond with force and kill them, you're going to prison.
Well, that's
most
just
of the women
idiotic.
In prison, it doesn't make any sense, but that's Tennessee, and that's what's going on there, and that's how they've got all these women. Most of the women in prison are there because of that. And she talked about another woman. You have to have her on, because this woman came home one day and found her husband molesting their grandchildren, and she killed him. And I think that's the natural justice. That was the right thing to do. But she was in prison, I think, for 27 years for that.
Wait a minute. A jury found her guilty?
The jury had to find her guilty because they obviously didn't know about jury nullification.
That's
judge just obviously criminal. The judge obviously didn't share, they don't share anymore about jury nullification, so most people go in and do whatever the judge says.
Well, the judge is a criminal. The judge is a criminal. He should be on trial. He should be on trial.
Exactly. They all should be. So these are just, I want to end with one more thing, and I've got to run. I've got a very patient dog here, but he can only wait so long for his walk, and I've really enjoyed our conversation tonight. And I was hoping some people would call in and talk with us about this. But, you know, all the rose windows, and they all have sacred geometry in them and things like that in these cathedrals. What someone says is the glass in those rose windows, like Dresden had, can't be reproduced today. They were produced by some type of alchemy. Isn't that fascinating?
That is fascinating. And you know what? I've read story after story, just like the mechanical computer they found off the coastline of Greece years ago. And scientists have tore it apart, and they've analyzed it, they've x-rayed it, And they figured out it is a navigation device. It is a literal mechanical computer that runs off of extremely finely toothed wheels, gears. And the scientists all agreed, we cannot produce this thing today. We don't have the technology to produce a machine that would operate the way this thing did thousands of years ago. So obviously we're being lied to by a lot. Lord knows what's under the Vatican. Lord knows what was in the Alexandrian library that they stole and then set it on fire.
Exactly. You know, fire is one of the ways that they get rid of a lot of the evidence. Every big city like Chicago, I mean, you just read any city and you find out when was the big fire, and they burned up so many of these Tartarian mansions that they just burned them down. Millionaires Row on Fifth Avenue was all taken down. There was one, and I should have done better. I should have made better notes. But some one of these, you know, Gilded Age millionaires spent $40 million to build a house, and it took 14 years to build it. And then he turned around and sold it. No, he spent $400 million, and then he turned around and sold it for $40 million, and then they tore it down.
What?
Really? How many of these? Yeah, exactly. How many? They just want to get rid of the evidence. So that's they burned a lot of it down. New Earth did a great one on the Cathars. The Cathars are our people. I mean, they were not heretics. And they couldn't get rid of those buildings. And the cover story for that is, like, absurd, absolutely absurd. So all I can say to people is do what I do. If I have insomnia, if I wake up at 3 in the morning, I get up and do some more research. And I encourage everybody, love to be wrong. And I can't wait to find out, get in there and dig and find out what we can come up with.
Yeah, amen to that. All right, Patricia, I know your pooch there is, as we used to say when I was a kid, his eye teeth are floating. So
that's right.
So go ahead, and thanks a lot for coming on with us. And we'll stay in touch, and maybe we'll do a part two on this down the road.
Okay, awesome. Look forward to it. And I'll hook you up with Nikki and Casey as well. Take care, Dan. Thank you so much.
Yep, take care, and Yahweh bless. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. I want everybody to, as you listen to this program today, remember that we have uncovered just so much stuff in my lifetime that I learned that what I thought was true was not true. Just point after point after point after point. The church lied to me. The schools lied to me. The commanders in the United States Air Force lied to me. The government lied to me. Professors lied to me. And sometimes it was out of ignorance. I'm not saying it was all intentional, but the point of it is they should have learned, they should have figured this stuff out at some point, and they should stop. As Stephen Collins, the biblical archaeologist, says in his book, academia, the professors of academia, know that the path and the travelings of the Israelites, our people, they know it was our people. Academia knows this, but they cannot speak of it. Okay, well, that's a conspiracy then. That's a cover-up conspiracy. Okay, so the idea that Khazaria was left out of the history books so we wouldn't do investigation, obvious. Tartaria and the Tartarian people, obvious, okay? Parthia, there's another example. Stephen Collins writes a whole book on the kingdom of Parthia, a fabulously powerful, rich, white Israelite nation. So powerful, it defeated the Romans in the only two battles where they met head-to-head with major armies at the Euphrates, and the Parthians kicked the Romans' ass. Okay, but you don't read about the Parthians in school. I know I didn't. All you hear about is the Romans. And yet the Parthians kicked their rear ends. Also, it was the Parthians that came to see the Christ child. They were the Magi from the east. And they came in a great caravan. They didn't come three multicultural mud individuals on camels like they tell you today. It's no different than the Ark with the animals in it. Two of every kind? That's not what the book says. Two of the unclean, but seven of the clean. Why? They don't want you to know there's a difference between the clean and unclean food. We're being lied to, misled at every step of the way. And I agree with Patricia. We need to dig into this more and see how it fits with empirical evidence, see how it fits with Scripture and the history of our people, because we are being lied to. And like Patricia says, I believe the mission for every one of us that's here right now is to destroy this evil system. That's my contention. It's my belief. It's been my belief since I was a small boy. I'm here to wipe out these people that we've talked about today. That's my mission. Now, I'm only one person. I have no money, no army. The only thing I have, and thanks to the generosity of some of the listeners, I have a small command center where I'm able to field information and pass it back out. That's not much of an army. But somehow, some way, our Heavenly Father is going to empower us men to bring this system down. And that's the day I'm praying for and the day I'm looking forward to, because I will relish that day like none other. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of reading about what's happening to innocent men, women, and children. I'm sick to death of the lies and distortions by these bastards that know better but hide it in the dark. And I think every prayer warrior out there better be praying up right now. The prayers of a righteous man or woman availeth much. You'd better be praying every single day that Father pulls the plug on this idiocy that we've got going on down here, and that we, his children, realize just who the hell we are and what power we have, and stop listening to these bastards. They have no power except what we give to them. And as the old saying goes, evil prevails when good or righteous men do nothing. You want to know why these bastards get away with it? Because the good and the righteous aren't doing anything to stop it. Father can't bless inactivity. He can bless activity, but not sitting on your ass. Can't do it. He can't do it. He won't do it. So the efforts of us all should be to dig the truth up and then use that truth as a weapon to awaken our people. And then once we're awake, it's going to be the flame and the fire that Ezekiel and Obadiah talked about. A flame and a fire to destroy the wicked. No compromise, no treaties, no mercy, just a bitter end for the wicked. That's it. I don't really have anything else tonight. I'm not feeling all that good, to be honest with you. So if anybody has anything they'd like to get in here real quick, if they could, send me a hand signal or whatever. If not, I'll just go ahead and close in prayer, and then we'll button this one up for tonight. Now, Sunday, Dr. Gifford out of Houston with MD Anderson and a guest are going to come on to talk about some rather important issues, so I hope you can join us Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern time back here on the free conference call. Dear Heavenly Father, we give you the praise, glory, and honor. We thank you for this opportunity to share. We thank you for Patricia and all her hard work and all of the other diggers, I call them, the people willing to go down the rabbit holes because they want the truth and nothing but the truth. And then they network together and share all this information with great courage, because we know the enemy watches and spies on us. We know Operation Talpiot out of the bastard nation of Italy. They listen in on everything. So it takes courage, and that's the good news. The righteous have finally grown a backbone, and they've said that come what may, no matter what the consequences, to do the right thing is our duty. For whatever purpose do we serve if it isn't to do the right thing? So give us that stiff backbone and help us to keep it, Father. Take away the spirit of fear. have us to look through the fear porn that's poured out on us every single day. Have us see the truths that are out there and to seek the truth in all things. And give us a sense of brotherhood with our fellow man and with our fellow family members near and far. We are a family, and we need to work as a family, operate as a family, and to protect one another as a family. And we ask also, Father, that you guide us. You're our king, our judge, and our lawgiver, you and you alone. You are our Savior, as Isaiah chapter 33 says. And we're looking to you to guide us in these terrible times. And we also ask, Father, you'd put a hedge around us of angels. We'd ask that you'd protect us from our enemies, because they do have a lot of power. But as you have said many times to us, if Yahweh be with us, who can be against us? Have faith in the Father, folks. And we ask all that in Yahweh's precious name. Hallelujah.